There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
You are listening to The Grill, broadcasting live from Barassi, where the game is always on. We're up here on the rooftop garden into the second hour of the show. So do come and join us if you are in the vicinity. What's this, Matt Fortune, about Lionel Messi being in town, is that correct?
Yeah, that's what I'll be doing this evening, is trying to track him down. Yeah, I've seen on social media, yesterday he was at the Dubai Parks and Resorts enjoying Legoland with his children. And last night, I believe he went for dinner at Nusret, as tends to be what every celebrity that comes into town jets in specifically. And Salt Bae himself was there. There's a funny little video going around of Salt Bae doing his thing and Leo Messi just sitting there at his private dining table, utterly perplexed, but thinking, I guess this is what I have to do when I'm in town, right?
They've got some interesting ways of cutting meat in that place, haven't they? Jeez, they're so like, hey man, just cut the meat and feed me. I have to watch the guy cut the meat for 20 minutes before he feeds me. Jeez.
Yeah, so Messi in town. If you have seen Lionel Messi out and about, then do us a favour and let us know where he's at. Not sure if he's popping down to Barasti. We'll keep an eye open.
Well, Tom, you do say that. Does he know that Fleetwood Walsall is on the telly?
Strange things have happened.
Tom Urquhart is here.
Well, very true, very true.
Stranger things, you know. Maybe he's a big Fleetwood fan. Who knows?
May well be.
Should we talk football very quickly? Because I'm conscious of the fact that we haven't got any kickoffs in the UEFA Nations League for a while. But there are some big games a little later on.
Yeah, well, we touched, of course, on England v Croatia, and it's more looking back, actually. There's not masses. The big game coming up is, I believe it's Holland are going to Germany. That's correct. Isn't it Holland going to Germany? Yes, it is. So the Netherlands beat France to relegate the Germans, sorry, should I say. So Germany, which I think is one thing that I never thought I would say, is that the Germans have been relegated. The Netherlands reinvigorated, really, under Ronald Koeman, who himself needed a bit of a kick on his career. He fell very short at Everton, I thought, but has gone to the Dutch, who themselves haven't qualified for the last two tournaments. Really, really struggled. But in the last couple of days, they've beaten France 2-0, Liverpool's Gigi Wijnaldum scoring, and then Memphis Depay, remember him at Manchester United, really doing incredible things in Ligue 1 at Lyon. He scored as well. So the French, their World Cup hangover, I best we can call it. They finished middle of that, and so the Dutch have got one more game to go and could top that group. Elsewhere, it's been fascinating. You see, people are very critical of the UEFA Nations League, but I realise while checking out the results, we have got football every day. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday and Tuesday, which I have to say as a football fan is no bad thing.
There's some big games to look forward to a little later on this evening. Got Serbia against Montenegro. That one's kicking off at 6 p.m. local time here in the UAE. Romania against Lithuania is the other game in Group C4. Group D3 sees Azerbaijan taking on the Faroe Islands, and Malta are at home to Kosovo. Group B2, you've got Turkey against Sweden. Scotland play later on as well. That one's at 11:45 this evening. They're away in Albania. And Group A3, Italy against Portugal, also later on this evening, 11:45. So as you said, plenty of football to look forward to and keep you entertained with. And a big one later with Italy against Portugal. So that's probably explaining why no international friendlies for Argentina at the moment. So certainly Lionel Messi gets to come to the UAE.
Indeed, a nice little break. And I think you see, we've heard of the number of Liverpool players that are down at the Gulf. I think this is their key time, isn't it? They get a nice couple of weeks off to go and enjoy some rest and relaxation as they head into what is an incredible busy time. But there are games all over the place. The fact that I uncovered, which I probably should have known, is the manager of Cameroon. Anybody know?
Not me.
It's Clarence Seedorf.
Is he?
Yeah. Which, and fascinatingly, they play against Brazil. And anybody from England will know this place as not really the sort of place to host Brazil v Cameroon. Milton Keynes on Tuesday night.
Yeah, that's an interesting spot.
Yeah.
Milton Keynes.
There's not masses to go on in Milton Keynes, I wouldn't have thought, but hosting Brazil on a Tuesday night sounds like a pretty fun thing to do.
It's extraordinary. Yeah. Really.
Be interesting to see how many Cameroon fans are out there in Milton Keynes.
Where are they going to play?
At the stadium, I guess.
At the stadium?
Yeah.
There you go.
Incredible.
We're going to keep an eye on the football for you. There was, of course, has been football over the last couple of days, but there's also rugby to look forward to a little later on. One of the big games will, of course, be England against Japan. A lot of chat in the build-up to this one. Let's hear from the Japan coach, first and foremost, Jamie Joseph. He's been giving his thoughts on this one. Games kicks off at 7 p.m. We'll have all the news for you in just a little while, but let's hear first from Jamie Joseph. He's hoping for clear weather.
We just saw England, you know, we're unlucky not to beat the All Blacks on the weekend and play very good rugby and very tough rugby. So, I mean, their experience is way more than us, tier one team. But he's also got a lot of experience with the Japanese footy, obviously, so he'll know a bit about our players. We've got a different style of playing rugby. We're not as big, we're pretty quick. But, you know, against England in tough conditions, it's hard to get our game going. So we're hoping and praying for a bit of weather. I'm not sure I'm going to the temple, though.
That's JJ there giving his thoughts ahead of Japan's visit to Twickenham. The game kicks off at 7 o'clock. It's live down here at Barasti if you want to be watching it. Eddie Jones, for his part, has been saying there's good competition for places. Is he underestimating Japan with a few of the selections that he's made?
I think that's been incredibly kind, Tom. It's only Japan's second visit to Twickenham. England have never lost against the team rated as a Tier 2 nation at that time. That's 41 games. And it's a tricky one for England. To answer your question, no, I don't think he's underestimating Japan at all. If England win by 60 points today, it's one of those where it's like, well, yeah, you kind of should have done. Win by 5 points or anything slightly less than that, it's so tricky for them. And like you say, he's made 11 changes. George Ford comes in and takes the captaincy, so Owen Farrell has the day off. That's interesting. Mauro Tojo will back him up, but there's changes all over the place. Harry Williams would have seen Carl Sinclair impress over the last couple of weeks. I know it was such an agonising defeat against the All Blacks last week. So Harry Williams will look to go in at there. A blindside flanker, Courtney Law is back. He can demonstrate his qualities, his athleticism. But it's not a case of showing that. It's those players that want to put the starting 11 under pressure, that feel like they want an opportunity. Of course, the World Cup only 10 months away, 11 months away. It's a 31-man squad, so there is spaces, and I think Eddie Jones is doing the right thing by letting some of those players in.
It's going to be an interesting one. Some new names in the starting lineup for England. Ted Hill, Joe Thokonosega, Zach Mercer, all attempting to impress Eddie Jones. Eddie, for his part, as has been mentioned there, he knows his opposition well. He had such a successful time with Japan in years gone by and, of course, took them to that extraordinary run in the World Cup last time out. Since then, he's changed his affiliations to England. And he, for his part, is not wanting to give an inch to the Japanese. In fact, he's been quite aggressive in the build-up to this one, saying that they are going to punish Japan when they visit Twickenham a little later.
Manu came in, did some training yesterday, but again, we'll be over-cautious with him. So, you know, as I said, he's about 99%, but there's that last 1% of top speed he hasn't got yet, and we'll just keep monitoring him during the week.
So you're unlikely to risk him this weekend?
Probably not, but we'll wait and see.
When I spoke to you afterwards, you're obviously hugely proud of your side's performance. When you watched it back, was it tinged with a little bit more frustration because they were there for the taking, weren't they?
Well, it's a missed opportunity, but, yeah, again, sometimes you learn more from that and makes you hungrier, which, when we're in a World Cup phase, is not a bad thing.
What do you think you should have done better?
We had opportunities in the second half to score points, and that was crucial, and we didn't take those. Mm. And that's a big part of our game going forward over the next 12 months. We've got to get better. That's about it.
You're talking about the decision there of Owen Farrell to the corners twice.
Well, it's not so much the decision. You know, we had mauling opportunities to score tries, and we should have scored there, and that's what we've got to be good enough to do. We did it in the first half. We do that in the second half, the game's ours.
Because when I spoke to you afterwards, you said, I trust my players to make that right decision, but actually in 12 months' time, I don't want him to make the same decision. So what sort of dialogue have you had with your captain about it? Essentially, you're saying that wasn't really the right decision.
No. I trust the players to make the decision. 100% endorse what they did. And we want a team led by the players, not by the coaches, because we can't feel the game on the field.
Those are the thoughts of Eddie Jones ahead of England's game against Japan. I mean, the only thing I'd say about this, Matt Fortune, is the fact that Japan put 27 points on New Zealand, albeit New Zealand were convincing winners there. Japan drew with France last time out, 24 points all as well. I can pretty much guarantee there's going to be points, but I just don't know if England are underestimating their opposition a little bit this afternoon.
It's absolutely. Complacency is the biggest threat to England. I read an interesting quote. Joe Marler was talking in the Daily Mail back in the UK, and he said, let's not beat around the bush. The England players would far rather a rematch against New Zealand this week than Japan. And that is, like you say, that's going to be the difficulty for them. Obviously, it was such a disappointment last week after such a strong start. The conditions got the better of them. They were within, a disallowed try and a couple of inches of actually winning that game. Yeah. And so you're absolutely right that complacency is the big problem. But I think when you make as many changes as this, the players he's bringing in they're not amateurs, of course. They're players with a point to prove. So as long as that mindset has been correct in training throughout the week, those players realise that this is really their chance, because, of course, it's Australia, I think, up next. And those players are, A, they're going to want to play in that game, but B, they're going to know that they might not get that chance. And so this is their only 80 minutes to really kick on.
Let's hear now from the England captain for today, that is, celebrating his 50th cap, and he'll be wearing the captain's armband. George Ford has been speaking about the privilege to lead out his team.
You're not only starting, but with both the co-captains on the bench, you're captaining as well. It's kind of quite a turnaround, isn't it, for you?
Yeah, obviously, it's a massive honour and privilege to be able to do that. I'd say that what I do in the week and my job hasn't really changed that much, so... I've got some great leaders out there with me still, and obviously Dylan and Owen being on the bench. So I'll obviously do it until they come on. But I'm just excited to play again, especially in this team. It's an exciting team, and we've got a great opportunity this week to take another step forward as a squad. And we want to show that on Saturday.
Those are the thoughts of the captain for today, George Ford. And now we're going to get the thoughts of the vice-captain for the day, Maro Itoje, another man who's had a massive impact on the game in recent years. These are the thoughts of Itoje going up to, in the build-up to the kickoff at 7 o'clock local time here in the UAE. And, of course, his first opportunity to wear or help out with the captaincy as vice-captain for the day.
Obviously, I have VC next to my name this week, but not much changes for me. You know, I'm still planning to go out there and play my game and, you know, support Fordy when I can and lead the boys as well as I can.
How different has this week been in terms of expectation and pressure? It's a very different mood, isn't it, around the place?
It's been different, but I haven't actually felt it being that different. I think... probably from the outside in, you probably think that because we're playing, you know, a team that is lower ranked than us, that is an opportunity to like switch off or turn it down a little bit. But that's definitely not the case. So.
And how much time was dedicated to the line out that perhaps, it was 4 from 4 in the first half, wasn't it? And then lost 6 from 11 in the second half. So. What have you done to make sure, should it happen again, if not this week, the week after, that you nail it as a group?
Obviously that's the hours of work on for us, and I think it's important to understand the reasons why that happened. We didn't adapt well enough probably to the conditions and to what the All Blacks were doing in the second half, but it's always important to review, then look forward, and we have a big challenge this weekend against the Japanese line-out, and they actually have a very good line-out. They're a very well-drilled well-drilled side. The hookers throw, they have a lot of good jumpers, so it's going to be interesting again.
I spoke to Jamie George yesterday, and whilst there's been a lot of talk about collective errors in terms of the line-out, he did put his hand up and say, you know, it wasn't the greatest day at the office for me. How's it been this week? I mean, you clearly know that he's the sort of player, I guess, that would... very much bounce back, and what was he like? Was he a bit down in the dumps on Sunday?
Obviously, everyone was a bit disappointed. It wasn't Jamie's fault. It was a collective of things that went wrong. You know, I'm fortunate enough to play with Jamie pretty much week in, week out, and I know how good he is. He's actually one of the best throwers that I've worked with, if not the best. And his throwing percentages are always rocket high. So that was obviously a collective mistake from all of us, but we'll work hard to rectify it.
I've got to ask you about Joe Thockney, the singer, because we watched him train. He was about a metre in front of us this morning. It's a pretty awesome sight, and he wasn't even in full pout, was he? What's he been like this week? How excited is he at the prospect of getting out there at Twickenham? And what's it like to face him when he is going 100 miles an hour?
He's a rather large human being. I think he's 117 kilos as a winger, and he can move pretty quickly. I wish I could move as quick as him. I'm really excited for him. I'm really excited to play with him. I know he has about half of Fiji coming to watch him play this week, so I'm looking forward to it. Looking forward to it, and I know he will do himself proud.
This is The Grill, live from Barasti. Enjoy your weekend with a 99 dirham main and a hot lunch combo.
Welcome back. Apologies for the delay in getting back to you there. A few technical issues that we're trying to deal with at the moment, but we are trying to sort those out for you, as I mentioned. Right, let's get you back up to date with some of the live sport that's ongoing at the moment, because we do have rugby, plenty of rugby ongoing as we speak, and some big ones to look forward to a little later on. So there is a domestic rugby union being played as we speak at the moment over in the UK. Where Bath taking on Worcester. Bath lead Worcester by 16 points to 10. Northampton are 8-0 up against Wasps. And Saracens, they lead Sale by a solitary point at 7-6 at the moment. First half of all of those games. We spoke about England at Japan. That game kicks off at 7 o'clock. It's live down here at Barasti, so make sure you get involved on that one. There are plenty of other games as well. Italy take on Australia. It's the first kickoff. That one kicking off at 6, at 8 p.m. Later on this evening. So Italy against Australia, 8 p.m. Change that one. Italy, Australia at 6 p.m. This evening. Straight after that is Wales against Tonga. Half an hour later, kickoff there. At 6:30 this evening, you'll get Wales against Tonga. And we've got a bit of team news for the Wales, Wales-Tonga game there.
Well, the big news, Tom, is that it's a 50th cap for Liam Williams. He'll wear a captaincy, so much as it is in the England game, Liam Williams will come in. But he'll be playing on the wing. Jonah Holmes will be playing in his preferred position of 15. Wales chasing an eighth win in a row, and it could be their first ever autumn clean sweep, which I found quite surprising when I read that earlier. Tonga, much as we said regarding Japan, Tonga coming into this massive underdogs, of course, a Tier 2 side. They're looking for only their sixth victory against a Tier 1 side ever, and they've never beaten the Welsh.
So that one, as I said, is 6:30 local time here in the UAE. It is in Cardiff, Wales against Tonga. So make sure, if you'd like to watch that one, get yourself down here to Barasti, where you can watch it. Italy against Australia before that. We've spoken about England against Japan. Some big names coming into that England setup. I'm really interested to see this this new flyer for Bath. He comes in to play wing. Chris Ashton moves to the other wing, and we see the first cap for Joe Thokonasiga, who's coming in. He has been absolutely barnstorming. Fijian by birth, but been a resident of the United Kingdom since he was 3 years old, moved over with his parents from a very young age. He's had some great performances for Bath. And again, I suppose it's one of those things, isn't it, Matt Fortune, where England have so many quality wingers to be able to call upon, which is a nice thing going into the Rugby World Cup next year.
Absolutely, but it's a case of finding balance, Tom, and that's why I think this Eddie Jones has made such a smart move in resting so many players and making the 11 changes he had. And it's just a case of who is going to step up. It's of course 10 months to go, several games, the Six Nations all to get through before that, but it's a case of striking that right balance. You touched on earlier, are England taking it too lightly by making so many changes? I don't think so. So it'll be good to see how many of those wings get a good run out today.
England against Japan at 7 o'clock. Scotland take on South Africa. That game is kicking off a little later on in proceedings. 20 past 9 to be precise. South Africa have been on tour for the Autumn Internationals, been in good form as well in all the games they've played thus far. They head up to Edinburgh, where they'll take on Scotland. As I said, that one at 9:20. Let's get some more on that one for you.
Yeah, well, Scotland, actually, you say that South Africans come in on a good run of form, and absolutely, they've enjoyed a renaissance under new coach Razzie Erasmus. This time last year, they were a bit, well, they weren't great, were they? They shipped almost 40 points to Ireland, but since then they've beaten England in a home series and, more importantly, registered a big win against New Zealand down in Wellington. They've got some really exciting players, and I really should have practiced the pronunciation of the heir to Brian Habana's throne. Tom, can you help me out? It's Afui Dianti.
Is that perfect?
Oh, thanks very much. Six tries in 11 appearances. He's really taken up the mantle. And even casual rugby observers will be thrilled by someone who's being dubbed as the next Brian Habana. He famously, and I was reading this, I found quite interesting, stepped away from the game as a teenager, a little bit disillusioned, but was coached back into the setup about 5-6 years ago and is now nominated for the World Breakthrough Player of the Award. Habana himself was heaping praise on him today and says that actually that giving the Breakthrough Award is actually diminishing the achievements he's made, and he should be up for the World Player of the Year Award. But the Springboks definitely going to go to Murrayfield in, as I say, great form. But Scotland themselves, they've won 9 out of 10 at home, and they're on a 4-game run coming up at Murrayfield, so they want to impress their home fans today.
That's to look forward to, 20 past 9 this evening. All these games have been shown down here at Barasti, so get yourself down there. France against Argentina, that's a lot later, 5 past midnight tonight over in Paris. But one game that is causing a lot of interest is the one over in Dublin. 11 o'clock kickoff at local time here in the UAE, so you're going to have to stay up low and late for this one. But it promises to be a barnstormer, because Ireland in great form at the moment, and New Zealand never have it their own way over in Dublin.
No, it's and reading up about this, I'm excited, Tom. I'm even going to stay up for this one, even though I've got a very busy day tomorrow. While everyone else is on the public holiday, I'll be at work, but I'm staying up for this one. One British newspaper I read described it as match of the millennium. And how often, it doesn't happen often enough where world number one goes up against world number two, and that's what we've got today. New Zealand have been at the top since for 9 years now. They're unbeaten on European soil since 2002. But that being said, the Irish, of course, famously beat New Zealand in Chicago way back in 2016, ending what was then the world record longest run for an international team, 18 games. England has since have actually matched that record, but then slipped up against Ireland when it came to beating it. But as I say, today is going to be absolutely fascinating. It's not a chance for Ireland to take world number one spot, but many are suggesting that actually whoever wins this should be heading into 2019, a World Cup year, rated as the best team in the world. It should be fascinating.
Ireland flanker Dan Levy will miss the match against New Zealand because of injury. He's replaced by Josh van der Flyer, who's recovered from his respective injury. Levy is ruled out with full body soreness, and his starting place at the Aviva Stadium has been handed to his Leinster teammate. Ulster's Geordie Murphy takes Van der Flyer's spot on the replacements bench. It's a new one to me. Full body soreness is what you get after a game of rugby, isn't it?
Well, yeah. Or as you were talking off air, Tom, when you go camping for
camping at 43 years old. I got the old full body. But you couldn't have done that, could you, Ace? You know, you couldn't wake up after 4 days in the field or 4 days of a test match and go to the fifth day and go, well, I can't do this today, fellas. Full body soreness.
No, I couldn't. No, you'd have a very angry captain and a very angry coach going, what on earth are you talking about? Get out there.
It's meant to be that, isn't it?
Yeah, better get out
these
there.
These rugby players these days. We've been talking rugby.
Yeah, but we're tougher though, so.
That's why I was going to ask, when you were playing with in the England setup and things like that, was there any ever sort of sharing of knowledge? Often we hear about sharing of knowledge of other sports and other national teams. Did you get to interact with the rugby team or the football team or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, look, we were very fortunate enough. We got invited to watch England play. We watched, I can't remember who they were playing, but we got invited to Wembley. And we watched the whole game from a lovely box at the halfway line at Wembley. But after that, we got to mingle with some of the England players. I mean, David Beckham. I mean, David Beckham was right there. And I was like, oh, my God, that's David Beckham. I mean, I didn't say that. I was just acted all cool, but geez, you know, I mean, we definitely got to mingle with some of those guys, and we also had, funny enough, we had Johnny Wilkinson's kicking coach came and spoke to us about attention to detail for someone like Johnny, and things like that. I certainly remember him talking about when Johnny Wilkinson, obviously, you know, you would have heard he's there 2 hours before everyone training, kicking the ball, and then 2 hours after. But one thing he said about Johnny Wilkinson, which was amazing, and he said, you know what, he would look at the ball on the floor, and then he will have, he was so precise in his kicking that he would look at like the 18th stitch off the rugby ball from the top, and that is the point, that was going to be the point of impact with his toe, or with his foot, I guess. And we were like, geez, that is ridiculous attention to detail. And we, you know, it was a chat about how the elite think, and that's something he spoke about, and that was an amazing little, you know, hour of him talking. And that's something, in fact, a lot of the guys took on board, and we started, you know, we always say in cricket, watch the ball, but this guy was watching the 18th stitch on the ball. So we started, you know, really focusing in on how to watch the ball. And it actually really helped, you know. When, you know, in cricket, they talk about loss of form and things like that. But if you can really, really get down to the nitty-gritty of watching the ball and that attention to detail, it's amazing how things can really work out in your favour.
Watching a stitch on the seam of the ball. You don't want to watch it too close, do you? You don't want it to get too close.
No.
I'm surprised it hasn't happened more, you know, thinking of that, and you look at someone like Sir Dave Brailsford at Team Sky and that marginal gains thing that he talks about so often, how that hasn't been able to be translated into other sports. You look at Sir Clive Woodward, post England Rugby World Cup triumph, went, I believe, to Southampton as a performance director. And when you're at the very elite, as we are, and we're joined by an England international cricketer, at that very top level, I think that any knowledge about training, how to look after yourself, how to condition yourself, can filter into any sport or any even walk of life. And I'm surprised we don't see it happen more often.
But is there also the risk, though, at the moment? I mean, we're seeing with the onset, certainly in cricket, let's talk cricket if we can, the number of coaches that teams have now, looking after every little minutiae, be it, you know, the skills of a batsman, the skills of a bowler, the skills of a fielder, strength and conditioning, nutritionists, physios, the psychiatrist. Is there the risk of there being too much?
Yes, but I think it's getting the balance right. I think that's the secret. If you can get the balance right, and the buck stops there with the head coach. You know, the head coach is the main guy who's driving the ship, and he has to really get it right. He can't have too many, you know, as the saying goes, too many chefs.
Yeah.
You've got to get the right amount of guys in who are going to make that impact, who are going to make an impression on the guys who are currently, say, for example, like you said, take cricket, for example. Say, for example, the England cricket team. The right kind of guys who are going to make an impact on that England cricket team. Yeah. That attention to detail is very, very important at the top level. Because, you know, at the top level, we take cricket again, for example. We know how to play a cover drive. We know how to play a straight drive. We know how to bowl a Yorker. Yeah. But it's the timing of it. It's the subtlety of it. It's when to bowl it, when not to bowl it, or when to play that particular shot. And things like that really can help a team to go on and win series or even World Cups, as a matter of fact. So I really think those things are very important. But it's up to the head coach to bring in the right kind of people into that environment and share the knowledge.
Yeah, absolutely right. I was just trying to find there, and I couldn't put my finger on the exact piece of information, but I'm pretty sure at Arsenal's new coaching setup, there are strength and conditioning coaches from AFL, which are two completely different sports, one far more physical than the other. And I wish I had more information on it, but I remember listening to a really interesting anecdote about how it's those tiny bits of mobility exercises, and I'm like to try and look after myself in the way that I train, but it's those tiny little bits, making sure that you're flexible enough in the right areas, that you're mobile around the right sort of joints, that actually can be transferred or not. But as I always share, I think the too many cooks, I think, can be a bit of a problem, and you find that often where there's this guy for that one tiny thing. But as long as you're looking after those key elements, I think it can translate across anything.
It's an interesting one, isn't it, Lewis? Because there are so many different theories, I suppose. And let's go for it with your international career and your time with England cricket. We're looking at the current England team over in Sri Lanka. We've had another high-profile injury during the warm-up. Boys have been playing football on the outfield. Johnny's gone over on his ankle. Had to relinquish his spot to Ben Folkes for that one test match, and now misses out in this current test match as well as a result of that injury. I mean, were you a fan? As a player, do you get a choice whether you can take part in the kick around before or not?
No, you certainly don't get a choice if you're a player. Right? It's a team. You see, what you got to remember is it's a warm-up for the team. Now, you're there as part of the team. Whatever the team is going to do, they're going to do it together.
Yeah.
There's no such thing as, well, I'm not doing it. I mean, there are certain circumstances where you might have a sore knee or something, or a sore ankle. Of course, the physio will advise, look, I don't want you doing too much warm-up today.
Yeah.
You know, just look after yourself. But if you're physically fit, you are there. Whatever the team is doing, you have to do it. But what you got to remember is, You know, the team is very passionate. England are very passionate about football. That cricket team is actually more passionate about that 15, 20 minutes of warm-up than anything else. But look, it's a tough one. Yes, you have some injuries. I mean, in fact, I was famously involved in an injury with Joe Denley.
Oh, yeah.
All those years ago when Joe was part of the 2020... not the 2020, but I think he might have been part of the 2020 World Cup or something like that. Anyway, I ended up going for a tackle. I went for the ball. I missed the ball and accidentally clipped Joe.
Yeah.
He ended up getting injured. And then since then, Andy Flower banned football.
Oh, right.
So everyone's like, oh, thanks, Owais.
Nice one.
Yeah, nice one, mate. But look, injuries do happen. I think if the guys who are running the game, the referee can just make sure there's obviously not much contact. It's two touches, so that, you know, there's no one in going in there hard with a sliding tackle. I think you can control that environment. But it's of course, it's unfortunate that Johnny Bairstow ended up getting injured. But, you know, funny thing in sport, we do say at the top level, 5% is luck. Ben Foulkes would not have scored that test century if Johnny Bairstow didn't get injured in that football. So, funny things happen.
It's interesting because we see it, don't we, with so many different teams. But we were talking about this last week and the fact that, you know, you don't see the England football team walk out onto Wembley with a bat and a ball and, you know, throw a few balls down at each other and things like that. And yet we do see it with the football coming out, all the Aussie rules football coming out for the Australian teams. In cricket, it seems that cricketers have their different times, unique sort of times or warm-up routines, unlike any other sport.
Yeah, I guess cricket is such a stop-start game where you can afford to play a game of football.
Yeah.
It's just a unique game that allows you enough time. You know, most cricketers are there hour and a half before the game. You know, you'll have a bit of a net or whatever. But before that, you want to have a warm-up and a stretch. How do you warm up? I mean, you can do laps around the field, but those guys, guys are not interested in that. I mean, the modern generation, I mean, I do some coaching nowadays. Kids are not interested running around a field. They're like, come on, guys.
Neither are adults at amateur level. I run a football team out here and try and get them to do anything before a game other than just sit in the changing room and natter about the week ahead. It's nigh on impossible. And then they'll moan about having full body soreness, unsurprisingly, the next day.
Exactly that. So, you know, a game of football is just the perfect way of just getting warm and you know, have a bit of banter with each other and just get things moving, get the body moving. And I actually think it's a lot of fun playing a game of football. And regardless if you're playing for England or if you're playing for a local cricket club.
I guess it's a matter of alertness, I suppose, with cricket, because there's, like you say, there's so much dead time where you might not anything come your way. So if you at least you've got your eye in, whether it be a ball nice and quick and sharp, I guess it's just switching you on to what's going to happen. It's not going to be a case of raising the heart rate because it goes down quite quickly afterwards, but I guess having your eye and making sure that you're already in the frame of mind of being a little bit competitive before you get out there, maybe that's why it's done.
But it's like you saying, I mean, as long as it's done common sense, you know, as long as people aren't going in with studs up tackles, you know, early on.
Or spikes because up tackles in cricket.
Spikes up tackles for cricket, wouldn't it? But because anything can happen, because there's that famous incident with Glenn McGrath, wasn't there? You know, on the morning of the test match, standing on a ball.
Exactly. I mean, they certainly were not playing football. He literally just walked over and twisted his ankle on a cricket ball. You know, things happen. That's just life. I think we get too caught up in the media about, oh, why are they playing football and they should never play football again. Look, he could have injured himself, like mentioned about Glenn McGrath, could have walked over on a cricket ball and everybody would be like, oh, okay, well, that happens. Things happen, you know. We've been warming up playing football for a good number of years now, in international cricket, especially I'm talking about England here. You do, like you mentioned, see the Aussies bring out the Aussie rules ball. I mean, England used to also play a little bit of touch rugby under Peter Moores,
that's right,
which I wasn't a massive fan of. I just did not enjoy that game, but I love my football. But anyway, look, we used to do that. So.
But then, I suppose the other thing, the other angle, I know we're probably doing this one to death a bit, but the other angle is that you were all competitive by nature. That you don't get to play for England without being competitive, and therefore there are probably players that you played with who fancied themselves as a bit of a left back or a right or a centre forward or whatever, And that competitive element is going to come out in a kick around, isn't it?
Oh yeah, of course. But that's the thing. Like I keep saying, you know, whoever's running the or refereeing the game, the rules are very much clear.
Okay.
Hey, this is just a warm up. It's a two touch. No one's going hard, and if you do go hard, you will be banned from football. And no one, trust me, no one wants to be banned from football.
That little bit of element. Who is it? Who did we have in town recently? Ian Bell was in town. He fancies himself as a bit of a footballer. He said he could have had a career, apparently. He'd got trials at Coventry. Now, you're the man to tell me the truth on that one or not.
I'm not sure about that. I don't know what Billy's going on about. Good job he could play cricket. Boy, he could play cricket.
Yeah, and extraordinary that he still is as well, isn't it? I mean, the man just seems to get better and better, and he's still knocking the runs off for Warwickshire at the moment.
Yeah, look, I mean, Ian Bell's a very, very fine player. Was a fine player for England. And he's now, you know, really passing on the knowledge, passing on his experience to the young guys at Warwickshire. I think it's a really good effort by Ian. I was a huge fan of his, especially when his driving of the ball was very, very nice. And hopefully he can continue and, you know, pass the knowledge on to the young Warwickshire guys coming through.
I want to get your thoughts on England at the moment, because they're on the brink of a series victory in Sri Lanka. Now, you've played cricket over there. You know those conditions are tough to get any sort of result in. If England do, and this is a big if at the moment because this game is in the balance going into the final day, if they do get this victory, though, and secure that series, how significant would that be?
Be huge. I've been watching the game a little bit and been following it. It's been a great game of cricket. I think England outplayed Sri Lanka in the first test, and hats off to Sri Lanka to come back in second test the way they have done, and they got the runs on the board in the first innings, and now it's beautifully poised. I mean, England only 75 runs away from Sri Lanka off 75 runs away from winning the test match, but England, all they need is those 3 wickets and they can go on and win that test series. I'm backing England. The way the guys have bowled, Jack Leach has been outstanding, along with obviously Moeen Ali, who's been very good, and Adil Rashid. I know he's given up red ball cricket in England, the first class game, but got an opportunity to play test cricket. He obviously took that with both hands, and now he's performing really well as a part of a 3-prong attack. In the spinners department, those guys have done really, really well, and I really think England will go on and win that test match tomorrow.
It's going to be interesting, isn't it? As you mentioned, Angelo Matthews, the man to fall just after tea. He was the key, wasn't he? Because he's so often their go-to man in that middle order.
Well, yeah, I mean, you mentioned a guy who's got wealth of experience, and you know, people do say experience in sport is important, and that's exactly that. But when Moeen Ali got him out today, I thought that should go on to be the end of the test match. I think that's where England would go on and win the test match. I think tomorrow morning, it'd be crazy not to start with the likes of Leach and Ali in outfields, and I'm pretty sure we'll go on. I reckon we'll win by about 30 runs, I suspect.
Just want to get your thoughts on the keeping conundrum for England at the moment. They've got so many world-class keepers to call on at the moment, and we're in this weird situation where, you know, some of the boys are keeping in some formats and not other formats, etc. We spoke about Johnny Bairstow just there, who had to relinquish the gloves to Ben Foulkes. Having done that, Foulkes, he goes on and gets a ton, but also really impresses with gloves in his first test match and, of course, this test match as well. From a sort of observer's point of view, from a man who's played at the very top of the game, is that something that you notice as a cricketer? I mean, we look at it as cricket fans and go, well, Johnny's keeping all right at the moment. But we were just talking about those small margins as well. Is Ben Foulkes a better wicketkeeper in terms of the fundamentals of keeping than anyone else in the country at the moment?
Well, he certainly looks good. I mean, you watch the guy keep, it's so effortless. And it's the same, you know, we were mentioning Ian Bell, batting. When you watch the guy drive the ball, it's effortless. He makes it look easy. In the same way, Ben Foulkes looks ridiculously comfortable without behind the stumps. Not want to take anything away from Johnny Bairstow. I'm a huge Johnny Bairstow fan. Yes, Ben Foulkes probably is a better wicketkeeper. Does he warrant selection into the team? For me, I would have got Ben Bairstow back into the team just because he's performed for England. He got his opportunity and he took it. and because of injury, obviously he's out of the team. But and I'm again, it might sound contradictory that obviously Ben Ferguson has took his opportunity, but someone like Johnny Bairstow hasn't retired. He was just missing from injury. So for me, he would have gone back in. And something I mentioned to you off air, if Jimmy Anderson was injured and a young guy comes in and gets five for both innings, I'm pretty sure Jimmy Anderson's playing next test, let me tell you. And because he's done it for England. He's performed from England day in, day out. And Johnny Bairstow is the same. So I would have put the glove back to Johnny Bairstow. But I'm not saying I wouldn't have found a way of getting Ben Folks back into the team. Because he's on form, he's got 100, he's you know, he's used to the conditions in Sri Lanka. So you got to try and work out who they could leave out and bring someone like Folks in, if that strengthens the team. That's the main thing. You got to play your strongest 11. And if that is what's happening, then, you know, you got to be happy with that decision. You know, perhaps you could have looked at someone like Ben Stokes missing out and Ben Folks coming in, because Ben Stokes hardly bowled in this game. They were talking about him obviously batting at three, and the shuffling of the order. I know second innings he batted lower down the order, so perhaps that could have been an option. But England obviously decided to go ahead and go with Ben Folks in the team and leave Johnny Bairstow out.
We're going to get more thoughts from Oasis in the final hour of the show. That's coming your way in just a few minutes' time, so feel free to send us your thoughts. You can text us now at 4001. Let's go to the latest news headlines, then we'll come back and wrap things up down here. One more hour on the grill.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcast at DubaiEye1038.com.